to start out, could I get you both to introduce yourselves? Do you mind?
Yeah. My name is Zach Miners, and I am director and executive producer of Conversion.
My name is Dustin Rayburn. I'm a conversion therapy survivor, and my story is featured in the film.
Very cool. Thank you both for taking the time to speak with us today. So the documentary Conversion is showing this weekend at the Portland Film Festival, and you both and others featured in the film will be at a panel discussion as well. To start out, can you tell me a little bit about how this film came to be?
Yeah, so in 2018, I found out that my former conversion therapist was still practicing, and I was pretty shocked by that. And so I always thought maybe someone else would speak up and tell their story. You know, I'm a filmmaker, own a production company. So I thought, well, what can I do? I can make a 5-minute PSA. And around that time, I was, I had just come out a year or two before that. And because of my experience with conversion therapy, coming out was a longer process for me. And I was at a gay bar and was seeing the show RuPaul's Drag Race for the first time and saw this drag queen on TV talking about their experience with conversion therapy. And that was part of what also was like, oh, I guess hearing someone talk about that on a national platform was really empowering. And then ended up getting connected to Dustin and then interviewed them for the film. And over time, it turned from a 5-minute PSA into a full hour and a half long feature film.
And Dustin, how are you? How did you get involved with the film?
Well, I actually go by Dusty Ray Bottoms. I was on season 10 of RuPaul's Drag Race, and I got to share my experience with conversion therapy on the national platform. And it's so crazy. Zach reached out to me and said, hey, I'm a filmmaker. I'm from your hometown in Louisville, Kentucky. How crazy is that? When you're home next for Pride, do you think we could connect and talk about our experiences and make this PSA? And it's so nuts because, you know, I would talk to people about my experience with conversion therapy before RuPaul's Drag Race, and people would kind of look at me funny and like give me a smile and shake their head because they didn't understand where I was coming from. They couldn't sympathize with me. But after sharing my experience on a national platform, getting to hear from Zach Miners and so many people around the world, it was the first time that I heard a Me Too with this experience. And it was very eye-opening and made me feel so not alone in the process. So I knew this was something that I had to do with Zach. I had to share my story on a much larger scale. And it's so awesome because we have not only Zach and my story, but we have someone from Canada. We have ex-Mormon lesbian from Utah. We really cover our ground in this documentary. It's really special.
Yeah, that was something that I was struck by in watching the documentary was the breadth of different experiences of folks. Breadth of what conversion therapy looks like and when in their life they're subjected to it. I definitely had a misconception that it was something that happens to conservative Christian youth, like exclusively. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of people think that conversion therapy does not happen today. And they think that because of, you know, well, I live in a liberal state, surely this doesn't happen. But the truth is conversion therapy is happening everywhere, and it's not just conservative Christian kids. I mean, that is a lot of it, but it's also adults. It's also, you know, moms and, you know, people that you might not think of necessarily as someone going through this. And conversion therapy has so many different forms, and I think that's one of the things that makes our film unique too, is that you're hearing from 5 different survivors who each have a very different story, but the same implications and the same negative impacts happened across the board. And so, you know, it doesn't really matter what form it comes in or what flavor it comes in. They're going to continue to rebrand. You know, luckily there is legislation being passed to help protect youth, but there are still always workarounds. There's always loopholes. And so, you know, that's one of the things that our film, I think, does really well, is lets you hear from the people who went through it and lets you see, you know, how it's practiced today, and also hopefully empowers people, you know, as you're seeing these people who have overcome so much, you know, like Dustin and so many of the other survivors in the film who have not just survived, but have now, you know, overcome and are, you know, helping share their story with the world and stop this from happening to more people.
Yeah. And Dustin, your experience, I think, stands out among others in the film as well, because, you know, other folks maybe sought out that treatment or were sent to a camp or met with a therapist, but yours was in the form of an exorcism.
Yeah. All of our conversion therapy stories are so different. Mine is in the form of an exorcism. It actually happened when I was 20, so I was an adult. I happened to be very vulnerable and at my lowest point, so I was desperate enough to try anything just to get the acceptance of my family. And this exorcism and this route of conversion therapy was something that we felt at the time was the right thing to do.
The physical aversion therapy, and I'll move quickly through it because it's very traumatizing to relive it, included heat and ice and electricity, trying to associate those horribly painful things with imagery of men who were either touching or having sex with men.
Right. It can look like so many different things, conversion therapy, but it has certain things in common, like across these experiences, which I think the documentary also shows very well, that the therapy, quote unquote, breaks down your sense of self, your sense of bodily autonomy. For folks maybe unfamiliar with what those mechanisms are, like, what does that look like? What is the effect that it has?
I mean, conversion therapy can take many, many forms. Broadly, it's, you know, any attempt to change one's sexual or gender identity through spiritual or psychological interventions. But that can look so many different ways for so many different people.
There has been electroshock therapy, waterboarding, shaming, just a lot of torturous things that these quote-unquote therapists have been doing on children and vulnerable people. But the thing that we should also note about this is these aren't real practicing therapists. Licensed therapists would never do this to somebody.
Yeah, and that sort of mental health speak or the coding of science is definitely also well highlighted and something that I think folks might not be aware of also.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's one of those things that we hear from people all the time who are like, realizing as an adult, like, oh, I did go have these meetings with these pastors, or I did go to this camp, or I did this thing, and they never, because you never told, like, okay, kid, you're going to conversion therapy. You know, I was outed when I was 14, and the next day found myself in a pastor's office, and the day after that, in a conversion therapist office. You know, it was said, you're going to therapy, and these people know how to manipulate and know how to make it seem real. You know, I felt like I was maybe one of the only gay people in the world because I lived in such a closed ecosystem. And I think that's one of the things that we have to remember is that when we're talking about people, whether it's a, you know, 14-year-old kid or sometimes even younger, it's harmful. And that's the same if it's, you know, in Elena's case, she was a, you know, a mid-30s Mormon mom. So, you know, it can look a lot of different ways, but all of them are bad and harmful.
I believe them. I believed in the lie.
Like, if you have problems, that's why. The problem is you.
The reason I deserved this loneliness and this disease was because my God no longer loved me.
You're not worthy of God's blessings.
You'll never be successful. You'll never find love. You'll never find happiness.
Sometimes I wonder, why am I thinking this? Or why do I hate myself so much? Or why am I having these thoughts? It's like, oh no, you were taught that. This was how they wanted you to feel.
There's a whole industry around conversion therapy that continues to operate and rebrand, even as, you know, some folks who were a part of it maybe have distanced themselves. Are there aspects to this industry that you think people misunderstand?
I think people are very misled with the forefront of Christianity leading this. Religion has really played a big role in conversion therapy as of the late years. It is an outdated practice.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things, too, in making this film that we've been very cognizant of is a lot of people think like, oh, it's another movie about conversion therapy. Like that's such a hard topic to come at. And so I think one of the things that really makes our film unique is that it was made mostly by survivors of conversion therapy or people who are close to people who have survived conversion therapy. And in some cases, you know, a lot of us have friends who lost their lives because of this practice. So it's something that's very personal to everyone on our team. And it's something that we hope that parents, and not just LGBTQ people, but people of all different backgrounds, because it, yes, it's about conversion therapy, but it's also about autonomy and about how you can be your true self, which applies no matter what your gender or sexual identity is, and how people try to force those things on you that in the end are not helpful and in many cases can be very harmful. But for me, the target audience I always thought back to was, what would I have needed to see at 14 that would have helped me see the cracks, that would have helped me? Because I was in it at 14 and I stayed in that mindset until I was almost 26. So how do we help people come out of that faster so that they can live a happy, productive life?
So you are both survivors of conversion therapy, and you're bringing light to this issue that continues to happen. But I want to ask, what do your lives look like today? Obviously, Dustin, you're a world-famous drag queen, for one thing.
Through my time in conversion therapy, I was told from pastors and leadership that if I continued on in a homosexual lifestyle, that I would never find happiness, success. I would live in a life of misery and never find true love. And it's so funny, I'm sitting here as a, I would think, a well-adjusted 35-year-old, and I have all those things. I've been able to travel the world with my art. I've been able to share my story with the world. I have a beautiful husband and dog. We have a beautiful country home. Like, it is, things are great. I take life every day and I try to put the best smile on my face, and I haven't let these things get me down.
Yeah, and for me, I mean, I own Chronicle Cinema, which is a LGBTQ production company, and we do all sorts of things from films to virtual events and commercial work. But, you know, we are all, as a, you know, queer production company, we are looking for opportunities and stories to tell. And so for us, this film, again, started as a PSA and then turned into so much more than that. And it's been amazing to see the family that has grown out of that, with the other survivors in the film, all the creative, you know, everyone from, you know, Blake, who wrote the music, and JP, who built miniatures, and all these different things that became, made the film what it is and took us on that cinematic journey. And now, you know, we are this like weird family that, you know, has each other's backs. And it has been so empowering to realize that you're not the only one that went through it, and that hopefully now as people see the film, they can join us in that.
If this is too inside baseball, I apologize, but I am curious about the miniatures. Is it a motif? Where did that aspect of the film come from?
Well, we were making this film, starting it in 2018 into 2019, and we had planned to go out and in March and April of 2020 and go and shoot a bunch of B-roll with the other survivors. As you know, life had other plans and we had a pandemic. And so we weren't able to travel to Canada and to Arizona and all the places we wanted to go to film with the different survivors that are in the film. So we had to rethink, what do we do? And so I would love to say from the very beginning that the miniatures were an idea that we had, but it really kind of came out of that creative brainstorming. How do we solve this issue? Because obviously when you're making a film, you want it to be cinematic and not just be staring at someone's face for an hour and a half while people are talking. And so I think one of the things that's really unique about the miniatures is that it became this visual metaphor, because at the beginning of the film, you're seeing these miniatures that represent each person's story that's in the film, and you're seeing them small, you're seeing the stage set, because when you're in conversion therapy, it feels real and it feels like it's your whole world. But it really is this fake set that is set up for you. And when you start to take a step back from that, you can see the cracks, because when you're in it and you see that close perspective, it feels real. It feels like that's your whole world. But you take a step back, you see the lights, you see the cracks, you see the things that are imperfect. And then at the end of the film, you see each of the survivors standing over their miniatures as they take ownership of their story and as they are empowered to tell that and, you know, hopefully stop it happening from other people.
You've spoken to this a little bit, but I want to ask specifically, who should see this documentary and what do you hope they get out of it?
I think everyone should see this documentary. I think there is something to learn for everyone. You can learn about conversion therapy, and hopefully, if you don't know about it, you'll want to join us to end this across the America and the world. And hopefully, if you are a queer person who is struggling with owning who they are and maybe going through conversion therapy, I hope that they can see this film and know that they're not alone and that they're beautiful and perfect just the way they are, and to get out of this as fast as they can.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think this film is so important, and I think so many people I've talked to say, oh, like, I need to have a glass of wine ready and, like, a therapy appointment scheduled for the next day, But then when they watch the film, they're just so blown away because it is a really heavy topic, but you are seeing it from the perspective of people who went through it and who are now on the other side of it and who are reclaiming their stories. So it is very empowering for people to watch. And we've seen that people are saying, how can I get involved? How can I help? And I think the film does a good job of giving people very practical ways that, you know, if you are an aunt or a mom or a brother or cousin friend, and you see someone that has the warning signs of, you know, okay, this young person in my life is going off to a camp for a summer and they're starting to really change their behavior and their patterns, like knowing those warning signs and being able to step in to tell people, you know, my parents always wanted what was best for me. They were brought to a pastor who said, this is the path. And, you know, they thought of it the same way that, you know, if I had a heart problem, they would go and take me to the best cardiologist. You know, they just didn't have the concept for what they were doing. And had they known then what they know now, they would never put me in that. So I think informing parents is really important. So I hope everyone sees this film, because whether you're LGBTQ or not, there are so many other things that you can take away from the film. And so we're excited for people to see it and to share it this week at the Portland Film Festival.
Yeah, so if listeners want to see Conversion for themselves, what's the best way for them to do that?
Our world premiere screening is this weekend at the Portland Film Festival, this Saturday, October 15th at 12:30. Panel discussion to follow. We have the survivors in the film, as well as Troy Stevenson from the Trevor Project. And Mary Emily O'Hara from GLAAD is going to be moderating the panel, so it should be a great time. And then also, I think there are other screenings happening throughout the rest of the festival Monday night as well. So, as well as opportunities to see it online. But we are working on getting this film out to the world and to a broader audience. This is our first step, and we're so excited for Portland to be that first step.
Do you have any final thoughts? Anything else you'd like to add before we wrap things up?
We're just so excited to be in Portland and to be able to share this experience with not only our team, but with the people here and the community here. And we're looking forward to having a great weekend.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much for taking the time to speak with KVU. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much.